I would like to begin this presentation by going back briefly to the first Bretton Woods conference in 1944 and examining with you what was achieved there and how it changed the world. Then I would like to jump to the present and address the issue of what are the mechanisms that we have in place today to deal with financial crises, their strengths and weaknesses, and what can be done to improve the latter. And then finally, in the third part of my presentation, I would like to say a few words about the challenges of the moment. At the highest level of generality, we know that in 1944, 735 delegates from 44 countries locked themselves up for 3 long weeks in July at the Mount Washington Hotel in Bretton Woods, New Hampshire, to deal with the issue of how to patch up the international financial system. Efforts to deal with the depression via currency devaluations and trade barriers had not only been ineffective, but had actually contributed to make matters worse in the interwar period. Trade, in particular, had collapsed. The conference was dominated by John Maynard Keynes, the head of the British delegation, who at the outset, perhaps slightly pessimistically, wrote to a friend in London that the gathering was the most monstrous monkey house assembled for many years, and that the only thing that he could predict with some reliability about the likely outcome was that acute alcohol poisoning would probably set in before the end. Maybe this somewhat dour assessment reflected slight frustration with the fact that the Americans had vetoed some of his more ambitious initiatives for the conference. I will come to this issue a bit later on. Nevertheless, much in fact was accomplished during the conference, and by the end, Keynes' own assessment had turned considerably more positive. All of us here have the greatest sense of elation, he wrote to a friend. All in all, quite extraordinary harmony has prevailed. As an experiment in international cooperation, the conference has been an outstanding success. Now, let me move and say a few words about the 5 features of the Bretton Woods system that emerged out of that very important conference. One important feature of Bretton Woods was a great deal of freedom for national economic policy to pursue national economic objectives, employment, creation, price stability, economic growth, to prevent another 1930s depression. In other words, it was all right now for governments to take a much more activist role in the area of economic policy to deal in particular with crises. A second feature, of course, was the emergence of a system of fixed exchange rates, something that was seen as desirable against the turbulence of the 1930s and the dissatisfaction with competitive devaluations. A third feature of the system was the convertibility of currencies for trade in goods and services. Again, this was seen as something desirable because of great dissatisfaction with the extensive use of exchange controls and wartime restrictions. Government henceforth was no longer to interfere with private sector decisions, for instance, having to do with the allocation of foreign exchange for imports. A fourth feature of the system, of course, was the creation of the International Monetary Fund to provide medium-term lending to cover balance of payments deficits, which were seen to be of a temporary nature. And then finally, a fifth feature of the system was that if these balance of payments imbalances were not temporary, then countries could alter their exchange rates. Now, the system implied, in fact, a bargain between the United States and the rest of the world. And the terms of the bargain were more or less as follows. We, the United States, will maintain domestic economic stability. You, the rest of the world, will fix your currencies to the US dollar and will accumulate reserves in dollars, which will be gold convertible. Now, there were numerous implicit gains for the US in the setup. The US could buy goods abroad without selling an equivalent value of its own goods. In a sense, it was a system like paying with checks, which are never cashed. The system, perhaps because the backdrop in 1944 was so horrible, proved remarkably successful and led to close to 30 years of growth and stability. with international trade jumping by leaps and bounds and effectively becoming an engine of growth for the global economy. And it also saw the emergence of the European Community as an attempt to build upon this global framework. However, there were two major flaws in the system, which, however, did not become immediately apparent until much later. One, of course, had to do with the gold convertibility of the dollar, which would become gradually doubtful as the volume of dollar liabilities outpaced the growth of the US gold stock. To have halted, otherwise, the accumulation of foreign-held dollar reserves would have stifled growth of the world economy. Many authors have also pointed to the role of the financing of the Vietnam War as having made the gold convertibility of the dollar probably something not sustainable. A second flaw of the system was, of course, the prospect of a devaluation, which often gave way to speculation. Capital controls were allowed under the Bretton Woods system, but with improved communications, with electronic money, and so on, capital transfers became much more difficult to control. Indeed, as economists will acknowledge, over time, the distinction between a current account transaction for which the currencies were convertible and a capital account transaction for which they were not became blurred. Most countries in the end gave up, which at times made them vulnerable to swift changes in market sentiment and expectations and speculative attacks. A new terminology was created in the economics literature to describe some of these events, bandwagon effects and self-fulfilling prophecies and so on. Professor Richard Cooper from Harvard University refers to expectations feeding on expectations. Indeed, John Maynard Keynes himself had anticipated this when he wrote the following: "Nothing is more certain than the movement of capital funds must be regulated. For if this didn't happen, money would shift with the speed of the magic carpet, and these movements would have the effect of disorganizing all steady business." Of course, Keynes' own nearly prophetic words have been proven quite correct in the context of many crises which we have seen over the last decade. So the system eventually collapsed in the early 70s. The dollar was no longer gold convertible, and the world moved to a known system of so-called floating exchange rates, characterized by, one, considerably more variability in exchange rates, including well in excess of 100 episodes of runs on countries' currencies in the last quarter century. Also, movements in exchange rates, which have often shown very, very sharp short-run variations, which have very little to do with what we call economic fundamentals among countries. Of course, a greater degree of uncertainty for trade and investment is yet another characteristic of the present system. Indeed, the perception that unpredictable movements in real exchange rates can severely complicate macroeconomic management against a background of increased international integration was a key factor in pushing the European countries to adopt the euro in 1999. And of course, yet another dimension of this system we currently find ourselves living under has to do with the manipulation of exchange rates for national gain. For instance, to fight high inflation through monetary tightening and an appreciated currency, as was the case in the United States in the early 1980s, or to boost the export sector in China, as has been the case in the last couple of decades. In the meantime, of course, the world has changed dramatically. Manufacture has gone the way of agriculture. Real per capita income has increased steadily. The world has become electronic. Financial instruments have become far more complex. Regulation of the financial system has been carried with a very soft touch. And all of this has contributed to a much greater degree of financial integration. Capital flows have grown several fold as well. And we have also witnessed the emergence of the mother of all financial crises against the background of large macroeconomic imbalances, a subject to which I will return towards the end of my presentation. All of this, of course, means that movements in exchange rates are potentially more disruptive of profits, production, and employment because of the much greater possibilities of substitution of geographic location in all types of production, which is one of the hallmarks of our present age of globalization.